are talking about the sixth parliament. Naturally, they are not talking about the sixth parliament because they have contracts beyond this parliament. I would like them to change and think about them being part of sixth administration and target also that things must be done in this situation and not have a routine that I am permanent, I have 6 years, then it's that year, and then it's that year. It makes us not do our work well. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Thapo. That is it. First of all,
I have reserved questions for the department whilst the AEJ was presenting, but unfortunately, since the questions by other colleagues happened to dig deep on the AEJ, so they ended up giving answers which I think I should not then continue asking. But for interest, I think I will touch on. Firstly, let me raise a concern around the commission. One to maybe establish whether are there any funds that are spent by the commission when releasing the state land to the beneficiaries. I'm asking this question since it was. The department is very sort of stingy when it comes to releasing the state lands to the community. Rather, they go for the private properties where they buy and release the land to the community. So, are there any finances involved in releasing state lands to the communities? That's what my question. My chairperson, then, going back to the department's prison for the. The question that I wanted just to raise with the department after the presentation by the AG, the issue of the Ingoyama holdings. But fortunately, it has been responded to because the question was, as the AG has been presenting these reports before the department, what stops them from making follow up on where are these funds, what are they being used for? In those workforce accounts. That was my question I wanted to raise. And the last one I have was that in the government departments, maybe even the current department, there's a tendency by officials when they have their sort of fingers into the cookie jar in some of the instances. They leave the department and get deployed or employed in other departments in the region. It could be nationally or the provinces. And the question was around there that do they make sure that they follow those countries so that they pay back the state funds, which might have been involved in sort of having their hands on. These irregularities at times, they end up with a lot of embezzlement of state funds. And lastly, Chairperson, to make my comment around the issue that Chairperson has once raised regarding the leases on people living in Gosman's government under the Ingoyama Trust Law. I just want to point out, not the entire province where you find homesteads paying leases to it's only the business people and those individuals who have opted to jump out of residing towns and went to the rural areas and built these big mansions. For them to sort of protect their staying there, there is some went for these leases. As a result, then it could sound as though the whole province of KwaZulu-Natal people are bound to pay levies, or matter, we need to tread carefully when dealing with the matter of because it might create some impression to people who do not know and do not, who are not staying in the province, to know that all so these people in Canada then are being forced to walk out towards the Nama Trust for residing in the area. And that was my last comment, Chairperson. I thank you.
Thank you, the visitor, the Honorable Mahmoud Traitor.
Thank you, Chair. Let me send it. Appreciate the presentation by the department and all information, Chair. I will start with the department. On program one, Chair, let me appreciate the improvement in payment of invoices within the region. But allow me, Chair, to register my concern on the consistency of them not being paid, all of them, within 30 days. I hope there will be a more improvement, teach you on that matter. If you manage to do this, you can do more. On program two, Chair, my question is around the issue of the cannabis master plan. Can the department give us help us by giving us more information on the progress of that master plan? Because I'm from the rural side of the Eastern Cape. So that master plan, if taken Nagasane, it will enable the economic activities of those in rural areas. Hence, I will continuously request a progress report on that regard. On program three, Chair, for the sake of time, on program three, Chair, let me applaud the department, Chair, for a significant performance improvement from 46% in 2021-2022 fiscal year to 89%. But Chair, I have a great concern there that the department did not achieve its target of recruiting 5,000 extension officers. And it's reported that this program was discontinued due to a lack of assurance of funds. My concern on this regard, Chair, is that the minister, during her budget speech, reflected on this and acknowledged the importance of extension services in agriculture. But now the very same department, it has discontinued this important service. Can we get a comprehensive report? Can we get an understanding of what you guys have in this? Was in program three, I appreciated the fact that UNRSEC only exceeded its target of training more youth. I just hope, Chair, that we will get that will state what were the youth trained for, and the skill that they acquired, hopefully also to get what we propose to the department when it comes to the NARCEP program, that we get a clear indication of what after they trained, what is the benefit of them being trained. Is there work provided for them, or is there a placement assurance when it comes after the training? On program, the other issue, Chair, on program 3, as I appreciate the achievement of the targets on the number of farms supported by the land development and support program, can the committee be given a report indicating which farms were supported, where are they located, and what type of support did they receive under this program of land development support program? On program 4, Chair, also the infrastructure projects are completed and they exceeded their targets. However, Chair, it would be interesting that we get more information in this regard. The type of infrastructure that was created, as I'm raising this issue, Chair, because this has a potential of economic growth and sustainable livelihood in rural areas. Hence, I want to see or want to align the relevance of or the importance and who is benefiting from this infrastructure services. On program 5, on the issue of FPSU, they did not meet their target of 43. Only 12 were supported towards the functionality. And the reasons, Chair, for me, they do not make sense. The reasons are being there's a delay in the approval committee, the approval committee, DGAC. Isn't it the approval committee, the people of the same department? The same department that sets their target, and they do not meet your target, and now you're saying it's based on your approval committee. I'm asking this, Chair, trying to understand or hoping that there is not a coincidence. During our oversight visit, there was a new language from the department of a strategic partner that was introduced. Now, if these very same projects are being delayed, I hope, Chair, to get to the gist of why they are these delays. Are they done deliberately so to justify the need of strategic partners? There is no alignment within the department that is dealing with the FPUs and the business enterprises. Can we get a clarity about why there is that? When I'm about to conclude, on the human resource and labor related matters, I want to get a clarity A service provider was appointed to design a fit for purpose structure over a period of years, but later that was suspended due to a consultation that needs to further happen between the department and the labor union. Now, I want to get a clarity about what will be the financial consequences of that. It's quite obvious that the term will be extended because there's no work done. And what is the time frame? Because you also reported that it will be finalized during this fiscal year of 2023-2024. I also want to highlight that, Chair, I'm coming closer to the farmer and the chicken now. Of the DG. On misconduct, there are many unresolved or finalized cases which out of 233, only 14 were finalized. In the morning, DG, we've been discussing or elaborating on the issues of consequence management. In our presence, there's an acting CFO. And there are other many related cases. In the previous years during our term of office, indeed, there have been cases that are related of misconduct that are related to the ALA, which is the recap. How far are all these cases, related cases of misconduct by the department? And why they are taking so long? What are the steps that you have done to address this issue? Can you get that as a committee in writing as a DG? The last one, Chair. Uma Mugobodo. Mentioned that one of the reasons that they cannot finalize some of the land claims is the fact that they do not have capacity in terms of personnel to do the work. Now, sometime last year, it's a pity I'm not sure which quarter to choose. Presented and highlighted the very same issues that they request more money, they request and they need capacity. Now, Chair, if you want to expand the structure or can this structure, have you applied to, have you embarked on the process of requesting the organizational structure? So that Chair, seeing a money see Lila, and so on and on. But that one is very much important. But what have you done on your side to make sure that you have a structure that will talk to the amount that you are requesting? That's my last question, Chair. Because
Honorable Director, the Honorable Mr. Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I must just say that the DG was just too short. He was probably the head of the chief as well. In his presentation, I basically, you know, what he said about the report. I'll start with program 2.
Sorry, Chen. In the report, there is an indication that 2022 floods that affected KZN cost farmers about 1 billion rand. And the report indicates that 30 million was allocated to support this farmer with repairs of damaged roads, fertilizers, and seed following the flood disaster. So I think the real question is maybe, you know, if the DG can just provide in terms of what was the channel that was used to allocate those funding of the 30 million, because speaking to many farmers and conducting oversight on that side, you know, they haven't received, you know, any support out of that particular disaster, you know, from the government so far. On program 2, once again, DG, I think the challenge is that I'm picking up that there are failed expenditure, and while we are really facing all kinds of challenges such as droughts, animal diseases, and land that are not cultivated, and obviously, you know, some challenges with poor administration of some of the land. So I just want to understand as to how do we really get into that position where there are really various areas that are needing support? And I mean, we talk of African oil sickness vaccines, which has been a pain for many of the farmers across the country. The next point that I just want to make, maybe also the suggestion or a question, Chair, is that, you know, in 2016, Land Bank raised a concessional loan through IDC to help ease drought and return survivability to most of the farmers. I think the question is maybe, Chair, is that maybe the department must really consider those collaborative efforts in assisting the farmers, channeling, you know, those kind of funding through institutions that can really, you know, address the farmers' challenges like the drought, the flood, and the fires. You know, going to Northwest, you know, they had massive fire and they had really lost lots of their cattle. They did not really receive any support from the government, so there was no disaster that was declared. And really the opportunities like, you know, facilitating concessional loans could really help these farmers, you know, going forward. But if there are really instances where they have supported this farmer, I'm just mentioning the two cases of Northwest and KZN, Northwest, for example, they got help from Free State and other, you know, people that donated to assist them. I think the 30 million was explained. I'm not going to go there. I'm just coming to organizational structure that the metric touch chair. There is 50% vacancy at the senior level in terms of the report. There's about 8 senior management, that's 4 vacancies. I think maybe if DG can just really help us to indicate what is the situation, when are they really going to fill those positions. It is important that we have, you know, senior management, you know, well big. With regard to Tranca, it is reported that you have commenced with a total of about 106,000 hectare being transferred to the communities. Are they transferred with the title deeds being given, and which province are those activities taking place? If you can provide that information, that would be great. There is also, you know, a report about, I'm just going to read what the report. There were 460 senior management positions on the startup macro structure. Of this number,
number, a total of 373 positions were filled and 87 were vacant. I think really my question is that which province have unfilled vacancies, and what is the department really doing to ensure that these positions are filled? Because 87 is quite a high number. Of senior management that is not filled is quite a big number. Chair, the next one is just really a clarity here, Chair. The talks about the number of hectares in terms of target, land acquired for redistribution, restitution and tenure reform, with a baseline in 2019 of 5 million and a target of 1.5 million in 2024. I'm not really getting it on the report. That's how it's reported. It says the baseline of 5 million 2019 and a target of 1.5. And obviously then you provide the breakdown of the number of hectares that you've acquired. But it's not, the numbers are too low to the numbers that you have got. You're 5 million in 2019, 1.5 in 2024. The report here is that you had 227,420 were acquired, and 22,833 hectares were acquired for farm dwellers, and 58,490 hectares were allocated to women. So the number that you have got on the report, I was asking myself, so what, 1.5 in 2024, 5 million in 2019, so what, it's really not much. You talk about increased volume of productive land, and I think the PESI is being used as obviously, that was assisted to increase the productivity on this land, 271,341 hectares of land under cultivation. I think the question for me really is, which provinces are they, what measures did you use to really come to this conclusion? Can we really go into the market or the supermarkets to see the product of this particular productive land from communal or smallholder farmers? And I think, DG, if you will recall, we had an engagement when we were in Etequini Market to say, how do you really track that all the smallholder farmers are really the suppliers of this market? Do we have really a metric that we have put in place to ensure that, we monitor what we spend on this farm and what at the end we see in the supermarket and obviously ultimately, in the, market? Because it will be crucial for us, to see those activities, happening at the real retail market, and then we will really appreciate that, the money that is spent by the department, we can see the outcome. The agri-hubs, see, you indicate that they are partially operational in Kora, in Eastern Cape, from Ofan, Northwest, Westernberg, in Western Cape. I haven't been to some of this agri-hub, but I can only report about the Western Cape one. The Westernberg is non-functional. There were equipment there. Equipments were taken away because they were not really for the purposes of the activities that needed to take place in those farming community. And the farming community's explanation was very clear. This was not really what they really need for cultivation in that particular area. The one thing that I really struggled quite a lot with DG, I was just trying to compare the 2019, presentation when, the land development support was presented in terms of what it's going to do. And obviously I did ask a question regarding the SAFTA, and the answer provided said something, and I'm going to try and approach what the answer was. The Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development signed an overarching MOA, Memorandum of Understanding, with the National Agriculture Marketing Council, which controls all commercial organizations, trusts in the marketing of Agricultural Act 47 and so on. A portion of this levy is, that's what we said, a portion of the this levy is used for transformation of the sector. The MOA allows Delta to enter into service level agreement with which regulates this partnership. The response is divided into three parts based on specific intervention as per agreement emanating from the memorandum of agreement with SAFDA and blah blah. So that I don't have a problem in the explanation. But then there is this LLDS, Land Development Program. So you have provided, you know, SAFDA with lots of FPSU, 30% has been completed, and most of them, they are not operational as we speak right now. The amount that you have really put through SAFDA is about 389 million rand that has been really used. And I can give you the numbers in terms of the non-operational as well. I've broken them down here. But I think there is this in the report that you are saying that no new FPSU is fully functional. However, 377 infrastructure projects were completed to support FPSU. So, 377 infrastructure projects, but no FPSU is functional. What is really the role of FPSU, and what is really, what function does the LDS really fulfill in terms of really operationalizing this two program of the department? If you can really maybe assist us in creating some clarity in our mind. The outcome 7 talks about enhanced biosecurity and effective disaster risk reduction. I think that goes back to what I've just really spoken with regards to issue of disaster. And obviously our biosecurity is a problem. We know that. I think the challenge for me is with porous borders, and I think the question for me to the department is that what is the collaboration effort in ensuring that, you know, we are not really affected by, you know, this porous borders in terms of bringing back the foot and mouth disease. We're quiet at the moment, but when it breaks out, you know, we know how it can become very hectic. We just got a big supply to Saudi Arabia, you know, and can you just imagine that interruption happening, you know. I think if DG can really assist us in that regard in terms of the plans that are in place to really ensure that, you know, our porous borders, especially in the Mpumalanga and the KZN, you know, those areas of FMD are supported. Chair, I'll just try and be quick, but please just be patient with me. There is a problem with regards to provincial operation. You had a budget the previous year of 892 million. Yeah, 892 million the previous year. No, 892,000, and then it increased over to 1.4 million. I just want to understand why the 50% jump in terms of the budget. So there is certain outcomes that I thought I just needed to get an understanding. You've got an outcome that talks to the increased production in the agricultural sector, and you talk about registration of new plant varieties. If maybe DG, for my own interest, what are these plant varieties, what cultivars, what is the benefit, what has been the benefit to actually even the smallholder farmer, you know, in accessing those varieties or cultivars, because the biggest challenge, as you know, is accessing those varieties that are really in demand in terms of the fruit. We talk about the implementation of the veterinary strategy. The issue is not the the compulsory community services veterinarians, but the issue is the qualified vets that are needed, the shortage there. I see it's not really being indicated as an indicator. Maybe I would say consider it being an indicator because we've got 103, if I'm correct, in terms of the number of shortages that you have in the department to really assist us with animal health. We know that the important role that livestock is playing in this country, you know, in terms of agriculture. The issue of the food scotland moth situation, I think in 2021 you did launch a refer to this matter to WTO. If you can really maybe just give us an update in terms of what has happened there, if there is any progress being made. Chair, the colleges, I know that there is, you know, there's a report there that you highlighted that, you know, there's transfer that needs to take place in there. If you can just update us in terms of what's really going to happen with all of these colleges. And while this process is taking long, what are we doing with the colleges that are dilapidated, like the Project Room 1 and many others that are really falling apart? I think that if you can really assist there.
Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity and welcome the presentation as presented by the Department through Tatara Masoji, which I think somehow when I was speaking in one of the slides, though I don't remember the number, but I saw good news on that slide where they were talking about the percentage that given the Department since 2020. Since 2022 up to now. My focus, Chair, as I was supporting what my colleagues have presented specifically on what the Honorable Bosi has presented, most of the information that she presented, she touched on my name, she touched on things that I thought one will also touch, but I'm not going to go there. I will support what she presented. I will then go straight to program 3 on food security, less reform and restitution. Distribution of land, promote food security, I think is one of the important factors that we need to take into consideration as this department. The Department, yes, you have achieved 8 out of 9 under this program. That Ramasodi, yes, we are very happy through your leadership and the leadership of the ministers, minister and the deputy ministers in that department. We see improvement, yes, we agree. Since you are there, we see things that are happening, which we think please us, because 89% out of 89% that we have achieved in this program, to me, is something that really we need to celebrate. And which this started years in 2021, 2022. The only thing that I think the department must look when they talk about this program 3, they must pay attention on the issues that you did not achieve via the extension officers, personal extension officers. You see, when we grow up during those days, we had a lot of extension officers. They were helping our communities out there to make the garden at home in other areas. So most of our people, they were seen doing something by the assistance of those extension officers, which I think it was a good thing that the government was doing, which cannot be taken off, because I see here you did not achieve it. Why? I think we must get an explanation why the extension officers are not being taken into consideration anymore. Because we can't do them all. I promise you won't do these things all when you are in the office. You must have soldiers outside who are doing the work. All the officials that are in the offices, they must remember that you can't do all this effort. You can't be in the office and be outside. let's make sure that the extension officers are being recruited into the department. And let's make sure that those young people that come from the universities who are postgraduates, who have already done something about agriculture, let's rope them in, to put them to come and assist the department. We appreciate your good work, because most of your targets were indeed achieved and exceeded. But another thing that I want to bring in is the issue of the vulnerable people that are farm dwellers and also labor tenants, including women and children with people living with disabilities. These are some of the people that, if we can take into consideration the issue of cooperative development. I mean, it's not all the people who will be hired to be in government. Some of the people must be at home, former Ocean Arena. Our chiefs, they do have people at home who can be grouped into corporate sector, supported by this department. And by Mama Shimunyana, you know, they will plant those small things, and they will leave these people. They won't depend on Mama Dani. I don't know if you understand me. They won't depend on Mama Lani. Those who doesn't understand me, they will ask. So if we have all to depend on Mama Lani, then it's going to be a problem. Our people will get sick. But if there is no small families, they have wrong anyway. They will eat and they will get something and they will be happy. So the biggest security problem with the extension officers need to be taken into consideration too. Most of the things that I wanted to raise, they have been touched by my colleagues, which is Mebusi and Katima Sisa at the bank. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Doctor, Honorable Katima Sisa.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. Address is presented, budget statements are presented,
migrated into the farming community. For the last 3 years, they've been protesting in Pretoria at different governments, but no one is attending to them. You train these young people through NARISEC, all of that, create a legitimate expectation on their part that at the end of the day, they will be absorbed into the system. And simultaneously deal with unemployment among young people. And what happened at the end of that? There's no corresponding budget or financial commitment to keep them into the system and to take them away of far from the street, from consuming nyaope, teak, and other forms of things. Are you happy to see these kids on the street standing like this and you, at the point where you think you'll probably come back? What kind of a nation is that that celebrates that kind of things of its youth? You want a commitment, and unfortunately the minister is not here. Official up here. Official. Do something that even if you do it against the law, you come here and say, I have to do it in the sake and in the interest of the nation. Go find money, absorb those 5,000 extension officers. Keep them in the system. Keep them busy. Send them to the rural province of Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga and Limpopo. Keep them busy. And come the ages, we don't even have the office of the Auditor General. It's just as useless. It's useless guys who must resign. And you dare follow on a DG who shall have committed money to the 5,000 extension officer will come for you. It makes no sense that we make mockery of government or parliament, because when ministers make this commitment, we clap hands. And what happens at the end of the day? Nothing happens. This has to come to an end. It has to come to an end so that we avoid what the DG said in the parable. That was the last point. There are many points that have been made, but just to summarize many other things. It's like we're flogging a dead horse, because at some point we'll have to review institutions, departments that we have, and see what best can work and that which cannot work must be discussed at all. I don't know what is the role of agricultural land holding accounts. It's a huge bureaucracy. Perhaps it must be streamlined, it must be made lean so that the bureaucracy which is holding back the implementation and processing of payments can be done away with, so that at least we have a lean bureaucracy that knows what its mandate is. We can't be dealing with the same matter again and again, one financial year after the other. An entity, which I don't know what role it has. It may have been established by legislation or piece of act of parliament. I don't see what role it is. It can function with one capable chief director and functions to the best of its ability. I think we have to look into the role of the agricultural members. Most of our problems in the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights says it saddled with the responsibility of distributing restituted land, and after that have to deal with post-settlement issues and responsibility. The question is, whose responsibility is it to deal with post-settlement issues? And why that person or the directorate or the division responsible for home settlement not playing its role? Because land restitution's role is to get land restituted, pay whoever needs to be paid, ensure that the beneficiaries are settled on the piece of land. Post settlement responsibilities falls on someone else.
so that the commission is helped to remain within its allocated budget and not get what it has been presented here by the commission. That it has been allocated 3.7 billion and it ended up spending 3.9 billion. Perhaps the commission as well must be looked into it going forward in the future. That has been Allah must be looked into about its corruptions. Perhaps they have to look into the commission as well. Because we should not be sitting here on our chair in the last one. Still been told about old order land claims which have not been resolved. So it means it's going to take us more than 100 years to resolve these claims. Because we're still dealing with old order claims. And there are lots of new order claims that have, which have not been attempted to deal with. And perhaps the commission must propose that there should be a seminar or a dialogue on how to resolve this old order claims. If the delay is in the policy, which I suspect the delay is in the policy of government, a policy which soon it will be confirmed that we are correct and the PAC was correct, that the 1955 concession has produced a freedom charter, was a concession to, in the future, cause the kind of problems we are dealing with, where there is paralysis of the ruling party and the paralysis of state, and there's no commitment to break from the colonial program of lenders and so forth. And this will confirm, we should confirm soon, that the same people who were controlling the Nationalist Party and now control the DA. From 1955 they've been controlling the ANC in the same way they were controlling the Nationalist Party. And that will be confirmed when the ANC enters into the coalition. When the ANC enters into the coalition with the
Don't be provoked by Honorable Matthias. Honorable Matthias, I want to entertain his last submission. You heard him saying there'll be no sauna. And then my worry is that the coffers are being siphoned, the budget is being reduced with all these costs in court, and soon there will be no money for the court. The Western Cape High Court has now dismissed their case with costs. achieving less than 100% or none of
only two planned annual targets. Honorable members, for the past 4 years, this portfolio committee has been highlighting dissatisfaction with the department's inability to pay suppliers within 30 days as legislated, because of the huge impact this has on the survival and sustainability of some of the suppliers, particularly SMMEs. In this case, DG, we believe you have to do better, and the department has to ensure that it complies with that. Honorable members, the committee has also been promised a fit-for-purpose structure for the merger of the department since 2020-2021. And despite the appointment of a consultant to finalize the structure during the period under review, we are now at the end of the sixth administration and the department does not have a fit-for-purpose structure. It is reported that the process was suspended due to further consultations between the department and organized labor, with the promise that the structure will be finalized by the end of 2023-2024 financial year, which is next month. Can we get an update on the fit-for-purpose structure, including the financial resources that have been paid to the consultant that was appointed to develop the structure? The AG, honorable members, has reported that a forensic investigation was commissioned by the DG into allegations of maladministration in terms of payment irregularities to service providers by senior officials. As the investigation was finalized after the 31st of March 2023, can the committee be finished with the outcomes of the investigation and the implementation of consequence management where relevant? I also could not, or maybe rather, noted that the CFO message is not here, DG. We have an acting CFO. May we be finished with the reasons as to why the CFO is not in attendance, and if any are there any challenges in terms of her post. In regard to the investigations that are being carried out, as it has been reported by the AG, there is the SIU investigation that was commissioned by His Excellency the President of the Republic, Dr. Ramaphosa, as far back as July 2019 on matters related to the mismanagement of the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, known as CASP. And additionally, since 2023, Ilima Litima was included. Interestingly, and despite their failure to effectively support farmers, the two grants continue to be flagged as support programs for the growth of black farmers. The department should indicate to the portfolio committee the implications of the SIU investigation on the implementation of both CASP and Ilima Litima programs. Honorable members, it was also reported that ALA is sitting with a healthy balance sheet, and it also appears to be doing well in respect of revenue from leases. However, I want to know more about the leases. There were times when farmers did not
other words, are the cases where farmers are not paying leases? What is the percentage of those farmers that are struggling to pay? And what is the department planning to do about them? Since the beginning of this sixth administration, there were plans to establish the Land and Agrarian Development Agency. I would like to request the department to give us, honorable members, an update regarding the establishment of LARA. We know that according to the plans of the department, the target was to finalize LARA by the end of 2022-2023. In terms of the restitution of Land Rights Act, the commission is required to submit annual reports by no later than the first day of June. In the presentation by the Chilblain Plains Commissioner, Mamu Kobot, it was mentioned that the reporting of the commission is aligned with that of the department. How does the commission reconcile submission of the department reports with audited financial statements by September and a legislative requirement to submit its report by the 1st of June? Lastly, on the commission, it reported that the 171 million that the AG referred to has been paid in full. Did it purchase equity or funded some project with those funds? What is the name of the claimant or beneficiary community and from which province are the claimants or beneficiaries located in? Often we are people or members of parliament that come from different provinces, and it will be best to understand if I'm located in the Eastern Cape, who are the actual claimants or beneficiaries in the Eastern Cape, and what has been their success rate in ensuring that they've been able to be supported by the department. That would be all on my side, honorable members. In the absence of the executive, the honorable minister, as well as the deputy ministers, allow me to invite the DG and the DDGs and officials of the department to respond to the questions as put by the members of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the members of the Portfolio Committee on Agricultural and Rural Development for very insightful questions and maybe also guidance that was given today to the department on matters that have been laid before the Portfolio Committee. At the onset, I would like to indicate that what we had presented was to say that this is where we are as a department, very open in terms of the work that we are doing. And we are really grateful, Honorable Zappa, for the issues that you have raised, that in the engagement with the Portfolio Committee of State, we would also need to be vulnerable and say these are the issues that have got to be done from a perspective outside of the APPs. I think that's something that we will have to look at. You are correct in terms of the brains within the department. I think we are endowed with a human resource aspect of our department that is really resourceful. And the only thing I think that we needed as a department is just to refocus ourselves in terms of delivering what is expected of us. And I will touch base on the issues that the honourable members had raised. Honourable Tarekulu, your issue that you raised on funding for state land, there is no funding in terms of that. It's just there. It's why the president had made a call for the 700,000 hectares that were released during that period. And what has subsequently happened is that there would be more state land that would be released, and that state land would also be supported from a perspective of resources to ensure that there's support for financial support for the farmers to continue with the activities if the activities are in line with funding. So there is more funding that is required for the release of such land from the government side. Honorable Chair, you had quite numerous questions, and I will come back to the questions in terms of teasing them out on a one-on-one basis later on. But for now, I'll just run through those that I thought were exceptions in terms of the questions that were asked. The next one was Honorable Masipa, in terms of his very open way of looking at how the department can assist in terms of disasters. And I would like to indicate that any assistance that we do these days is based on the Disaster Management Act. And the Act is a prescriptive on how work should be done in assessing the level of damage that was done to a particular area, starting at municipal level, going to provincial level, and then coming up to national departments. We are part and parcel of the engagement with the National Disaster Management Center, and funds that are released, including the 30 million, is in line with our engagement that we have as the National Disaster Management Center. And we will avail the funding of the 30 million that we have done in this case. I think it's very important that we raise that one. Now, the web questions that I would like to lump at a very high level and then come back to the engagements that we have had today. Now, the biggest question that I think permeated the discussions here, and Honorable Matthias captured it in a way that a policy statement needs to be converted into an operation once it has been done. And this is a typical example that we have got to reflect on when it comes to the extension of the work. What has happened is that in 2020, the Minister of Finance makes a call to say that there has got to be 5,000 extension officers employed by the department. So we go as a department and say this is how we are going to do the work that needs to be done by the extension officers. We also go to an extent of coming to this portfolio committee and reporting that in the meantime, what we will do is that we will utilize savings in order to have them within the department. We go on, and at some stage, we have got contracts with them, reflected in terms of the 3,500 that you see, in anticipation that that policy statement would then translate into funds that would be appropriated to the department for this particular function. That is not coming up, and the department has got other pressing needs that we have got to do. Unfortunately, in terms of, and I hear what Honorable Matthias is saying, that at some stage we have got to do things that would maybe shock us as employees of the state. But in this case, our issue was that we had them for 9 months. Each and every time trying to expand based on what we have, but beyond the 9 months, the department would not be in a position to sustain that, and would be going into huge financial contact. The minister continues to engage with the Minister of Finance to see how can we do it. As a department, we are the biggest proponents in terms of the employment of extension officers, because we understand the importance of extension officers in the whole ecosystem that agriculture is, and we will continue doing that plea on behalf of the farmers, because this is all about the farmers. There are also areas where Honorable Zappa, Honorable Chete, and Honorable Mandela were asking about what takes this issue around the organizational structure and why do we externalize when we have got the capacity to do this. I think one of the things that we have got to be vulnerable on is that when the merger happened, there was that element of saying that we have got two departments, and in these two departments, the level of independence would not be what one would want to have. And therefore, if you are going to engage in an operation of a new structure, you might have people protecting interests. And it was then decided at that stage that there would be an external engagement through a company that would do this. Unfortunately, in the process of coming up with this, there were a few things that we as a department had really not gone to an extent of going through. Because the issue around the labor union, rightly so, they had clearly the issue around process. And they had to be consulted in terms of process. It's prescribed that you are supposed to be done that. And we had missed that, and it also took the time that we had to do. Post the engagement with labor, there were engagement with the service provider. And unfortunately, the service provider could not proceed because there were a few things that we had put on the table that they had got to happen in terms of frequency. Since then, the service provider has pulled out, and the department is left with option one that we had to do it ourselves. But in the process, we have not lost any money because the service provider was, in a way, saying that they wouldn't even be taking the money from the department because of a few things that we had highlighted with them. So I would want to reassure the Honorable Portfolio Committee that there is no money that the department would lose through this process. And I think that with hindsight, the department, in trying to give organizational peace, left an opportunity to just do the structure and get it over with decisively. So. Honorable Chanda, you, Honorable Mandela, and Honorable Sapa, you were going on the issue around consequence management within the department. And I'm going to settle on the issue that Honorable Sapa was saying, lay things back so that you can assist where you can assist. Now, you have got two departments that merged in 2019. You have got historic cases that come from the old department. 168 of those are forensic investigation reports that are on the table. 10 of those are SIU reports. On the side, there are other issues that crop up. At head count, or case count, sorry. At this moment, we have got 1,098 cases in the department, 1,098 cases. Now, you have got a very compromised employee relations unit in the department because you have got the director and I think almost six people who are sitting in this particular unit. Now, how do you resolve on the issue that we had gone to the state attorney, as Minister had indicated, got three law firms to assist us to deal with this backlog of cases that we have. Otherwise, what we are promoting, as the AG has indicated, is a culture of no consequence management. So we are busy with that in terms of these three areas. And I think that there would be a lot of noise in terms of what the department is currently doing from the employees of the department. But however, in terms of Section 38 of the PFMP, there is no way that one can just not do anything because we are obliged to deal with the issues that are at hand. There was a question to say, now how do we deal with the cases? There hasn't been any indication coming from the department on how we are dealing with other cases. Now, if you have got to look at an expert preventing and combating of corruption activities act, or practice is called, you are expected as an accounting officer to report any malfeasance that is over 100,000 and without failure done it with the law enforcement authorities in South Africa. We have done it, and it's something that we are currently looking at. And the law enforcement agencies would come to the department to indicate how far they are in terms of those cases. But internally also, we're following the methods because we have got to deal with them administratively and also from a legal point of view. Honorable Mandela has indicated that you would like to have the outcomes of the investigation, especially when it comes to a particular case. And now, Honorable Chair, deliberately I think the AG would not delve into the issue because of the sensitivities, and I know that I have got to be very open with you. But this issue is very sensitive because it has been reported to law enforcement agencies for them to carry through with it. And I have indicated to the AG that we shouldn't as you know, that SIU, in terms of the proclamation, they report directly to the president. They only report to us in terms of access and say, this is how far we have progressed on certain issues, but with not deep details. I'm also looking forward to them outlining what the findings would be, because these two, as the case indicated, CAF and ILIP, are at the center of providing funding to all the farmers that we are having. And therefore, the implementation of our program actually relies on these two. On the LARA chain, we had gone to a point where we were about to finalize the establishment of the LARA, both from an internal point of view, when we are advised that we are going to start it through a particular process, and we hope that the minister will be making the pronouncement soon. Granted, it took long, but LARA is not off the table. If we listened to the commissioner in terms of the full settlement support unit, we're looking at LARA to be doing that kind of work and assisting and taking off the pressure of the commission on this work. Ken's asking where is the CFO of the department. That he just indicated that the CFO of the department has resigned from the department, and that is why we see Memukon being here as a person who is active as the CFO at this moment. Chair, if you allow me, having dealt with those high-level issues, I will just quickly pick on the peak issues that I would use one line just to respond so that it does not take the time of the portfolio committee. And I will settle firstly to make sure that you had quite a few questions that you had asked. The issue around payment within 30 days, I think that it has been made clear that we can do better. The 97% that we are having is not the deed all, because we're dealing with an ornate issue. It's either you are at 100% or you are failed, and we have consistently said this is a failure rate. But we are putting up, we have put up systems to deal with this issue, and we hope that we will report better. Because the last time around, I think the last quarter, we were at 100. It shows that there is a level of improvement from that level. Now, on the cannabis master plan, you would know that people who belong to this issue that the Honorable Treasurer was saying, we had a Bulindela engagement at President's just to deal with the master plan. And all the role players and stakeholders were there or in terms of the plan. Some of those who already see them happening, where the police have got to do concessions, we have got the DTIC, we have got to do certain work. So that work in terms of the cannabis master plan is currently unfolding under the leadership of the president in order to coordinate the whole of government to ensure that we move on cannabis master plan. We will supply a comprehensive report on the land development support along with that. We stand here because in the AG's articulation, AG was saying there were 283 or so farmers who needed support, but we could only deal with 83 at the moment. And we will refer to the report that we had previously that was pointing to how we can deal with LDS. So there's a very methodical way of dealing with LDS, but we can do better. In the submission that was made by the acting CFO, she had indicated to this portfolio committee how allocation in the very same unit is going down from 900 million now to 500. So you also have got those resource constraints that we have got to deal with. On the FPSUs, I think on itself, the issue of FPSUs is an issue of also misinterpretation from our side on how we want to deal with the issue around an FPSU and an agri, for a lack of a better way, how we build up towards the bigger that we want to have. And we had engagement through the Meshoma Group, engagement with the African Development Bank, to say how do we then come up with a model that would assist South Africa to just move this FPSUs and coagulate them into a model that would be working. I hope that we will be able to then, after AMC agreement, although I should say there are quite a lot of things that they're supposed to deal with when it comes to that 2018 agreement and how it then cascades to be implemented within the broader sector. Spoken to misconduct. Honorable Masipa, we at executive level, there are only two posts that are vacant. It's the one for corporate services, support services, and also for the CFO. And all of those because of the issues that we have highlighted. The other one was a resignation, the other one was a retirement, and that process is to fill the post is also unfolding. Now, you have advised quite incisively on the issue around concessional loans. That's something that we will take home as a homework just to see how do we deal with it over a period of time. I think that will also assist us with that old way of dealing with the 2% contingency as a department. Now, we have got a report relating to Trankra and how every department has moved to deal with it. Anonymous people will also avail that, but the work that is being done there is as reported. Now, the issue that I would really want to get a reflection on is how do we use smart trackers for smallholder and subsistence farmers and their way into the market. And I think that's something that we have got to really report on. I know that the NAMC has got a way of dealing with it, but we just have got to cascade that system into smallholders so that we can track their market access engagement. On the, I've spoken to this issue on the LDS and how SABDA and others came into a relationship with the department and would not go into the repetition when I spoke to the FPSUs, Honorable Masipa, if you agree. But the issue around borders and how FMD has got the likelihood of destroying the gains that we have made in the past year is a true issue. And together with the DMA and the South African National Defence Force, who are responsible for borderline control, their engagement that we are having. Honourable members would recall that the DMA is actually made up of officials. Some of those officials come from the former Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. They have just been expanded into the DMA. So they still do the functions that the department was doing previously. It's just that they are now doing it on behalf of the DMA. However, the legislative mandate still resides with the department. So we still have got that lever, the policy lever or legislative lever, if you may refer to. The provincial operations, Honorable Masipa, refers to what Minister had indicated, that there is a process of rationalization of the work that the department does. So that we can separate agriculture be done at the provincial level, as the national department is only responsible for policy issues, so that there is no traffic that goes to one farm, and that traffic results in a lot of confusion to the farmer who's supposed to then produce for the farm, for the country. Wants to erode quite a lot of roads. On the famous issue of the false positive loss and the update, Honorable Masipa, the Citrus Growers Association had requested a meeting with Minister Dugina and Minister Patena, where the next step of dealing with the issue at the WTO is going to be finalized. So I just want to leave it at that very high level. But it still remains a threat to the survival of our citrus industry in South Africa. And I would like to put it very openly that FCM, citrus is not the only host for FCM. We have got others, including flowers, which are more riskier than where we are. On the qualities of agriculture, that matter is receiving attention from the Department of Higher Education and Training. There were a few steps that we had missed, and we hope that we will be able to finalize those. But what we are currently doing through the current funding through ACAS, there's still money that goes through the colleges. But your observation in terms of colleges also extends to universities. there seems to be a complete misalignment in terms of what our administration is doing and what we are supposed to do. And it's an admission, I'm not going to even contest in terms of the observation made. The only issue that we have got to make sure we do is the issue around ensuring that of the two areas that we are having, the issue around payment within 30 days is dealt with. We would like to pause here. I did not want to give it to the other colleagues of mine because it would have taken a longer time in terms of the engagement. But summarily, those are the issues. And we would also be submitting for the areas that Honorable Chweka had raised formal reports to the Portfolio Committee. And I'll hand over to the Commission. Honorable Chair, with your permission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The center must hold.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm also going to be quick. My question around the issue of the Western Cape and the small number of outstanding claims. The claims in the Western Cape that are outstanding, old order, is 248, and most of them are in the city of Cape Town and are even registered rights or legal tenancy. So I think when I was saying the small, I was referencing to the extent of hectares that are impacted, and so it's easier for us to deal with them compared to claims, for example, in Limpopo or KZN, where you're talking about rural claims, and it's got a high number of hectares that are referenced. I think the DG has already responded to the question of transfer of state lands. The only costs that are associated with it are transfer costs. Interesting enough, it's much more difficult to transfer state lands than to transfer private lands because of the processes that are involved. It's a relationship that we're building and we're continuing to do work on it. The Commission's question around the capacity, both budget and human resource, we had indicated previously that under WIASA we had met all of that, including the issue of the backup staffing strategy on how we can possibly fast track. Part of WIASA had an organizational improvement plan that we had proposed, including an interim structure which was approved, and also that our fit for purpose structure was going to be aligned with that of the department. And with the austerity measures and as well as the outstanding fit for purpose structure of the department, that has an impact on us. So we'd already costed all of those things, and we knew exactly what we needed, how many home bodies in order for us to make it to fast track, but because of the current system, we are not able to then implement the proposals that we have made. I think the DG has covered the issue of the post-settlement support, on the question of that, the fact that we were supposed to have submitted our report in June, I think this is an issue that you raised, Honourable Chair, previously, that we can only submit once the AG has expressed an opinion on our books, and the fact that, again, when we separate the Commission versus branch institution, the budget sits with the department, the bulk of the budget of the Commission. And so there is that discrepancy, and the only way we can resolve it is through an amendment of our legislation so that we align with the department if we do not become autonomous. But we have written a letter to Parliament indicating that we will likely continue to submit late because we can only submit after we've been audited by the AG, but we we are looking at perhaps amending our legislation to comply. We, in our annual report, also submit a list of all of the projects that have been finalized or settled in that financial year. The list is available on those projects specifically. And so far as it relates to the 1.1 million, those were grants that were allocated to specific projects in Northwest. I think it was Makereni and Mandazini. It was Mkuze, Mkobokazi in KZN. Those were specific grants that were associated with that project, with those projects, which are the ones that were in APSA and we could not pay them out. And as I've already indicated, we have a zero balance on those. It was just an issue of some challenges that cropped up that we could not deal with. I think, Chair, I have covered all of the issues that were raised for the Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mama Kabota, Commissioner, the Land Claims and Institution, DG and officials of the department for the responses and the presentation standards to the Portfolio Committee. Honorable members, we are challenged with time. Two presentations to go, that of OVG and PPCB, 25 plus 4. Also, members are challenged with transport back to the park. So, try and exercise your discretion as far as the input you make, so we may be able to cover at least the last remaining hour and a half in good speed. Allow me therefore to invite the OBG to present, which will be followed immediately by PPCB, and then we'll take questions and clarity and comments. As they are settling in, can I ascertain if Mehmet is in attendance? Yes. Mehmet is here. Yes. Perfect. And if we agenda, I am subject.
Thank you. evaluation certificates within 50 of the 50 days that are set aside. The second indicator under sub-program evaluation is the percentage completion of evaluation reports submitted by clients within the specified timelines. There, in the last financial year or the financial year before the one under review, 21-22, we were able to issue all of our evaluations within the stipulated timelines that were agreed with the client. In the year under review, 22-23, we were only able to do so 86% of the time, meaning 14% of the time we were not able to issue within the specified timelines. This target was not achieved. The reasons for deviation, the OG could not achieve the planned performance target due to the following reasons. A sharp increase in the number of evaluation requests that were received as compared to the previous evaluation year. High staff turnover within the evaluations team. The increase in state land acquisition offer rejections by property owners, which triggered the SLA team to submit more requests in order to increase opportunities for successful transactions. Lastly, an increase in terms of the current valuations, which affects valuers' performance, as current valuations tend to have complexities that require more effort in terms of research and analysis. The planned interventions are that we have initiated an organization design and development project, which is analyzing the current operating model, organizational structure, and evaluation capacity. This project will advise the VG and the minister on the optimal operating model and the required evaluation capacity in the OVG. We have already engaged with the ministry through the office of the Deputy Minister Squacha, and we are in the process of concluding that review. We have gone to the last EXCO, which has mandated the Commission, LRTR and the OVG to do an analysis of the reasons for offer rejections in terms of when the department gives offers to that owners, why is it that they're getting rejected. The report has been concluded and we are on our way back to the EXCO of the department. The next indicator is the average number of working days taken to resolve queries after issuing the final certificate. So what the clients were saying was that much as we may be meeting some of our targeting in terms of turnaround times, there was a problem with when they have queries post the submission of the evaluation report and evaluation certificate. So we put it in the APP and we targeted that we would finish within 10 days. We ended up finishing within 110 days. And the reasons were that there were two main culprits that cost us that amount of time. With those two evaluation reports requiring that we receive a legal opinion on whether once we have issued the final evaluation certificate, we are able to revisit that final evaluation certificate. The initial advice that we received, opinion that we received, said once that final certificate is issued, we cannot amend it. We look for a further legal opinion, which unlocked the letter and indicated that if we were able to relook at matters that may arise post the issuance of the final evaluation certificate. So those two evaluations are the reason why we ended up with such a huge deviation from the target, because it takes time for us to reach the state attorney and for the state attorney to acquire counsel that is appropriate for the type of advice that we are seeking, and indeed take that amount of time. enhanced data management capabilities, another indicator. We were not able to achieve this target, and the reason is because the indicator primarily depended on an appointment of a suitable service provider to assist with the design of the project of enterprise architecture plan. As at the end of March, the procurement phase was at an advanced phase. That too, we did not achieve. In terms of operations, to ensure that the efficient and effective functioning of the Office of the Valuer General, this indicator was dependent on the Property Valuation Act Ministerial Advisory Panel work to be supported by the OVG. The PVA map is made up of people who come in the name from industry from outside of the Office of the Valuer General, and they had not concluded the work. So this indicator was going to be triggered once the PVA map report has been received and the minister has pronounced on it. By the end of the financial year, that report had not been pronounced upon by the minister. In fact, on Wednesday the 15th, the PVA map is meeting, which is most likely going to be the final report that they are going to adjust and submit to the minister. The next one is on the filling of roles within the OVG. We had targeted 70, we were able to fill 60. We had lost some of the valuers in particular within the environment, and this is why we have not been able to achieve this targeting. Also as a result of the fact that we are still dealing with the issue of the operating model as well as the organogram that is meant to support that operating model. Performance indicator, the number of evaluation performance reports. This is an indicator that it's a report that gets produced internally as to how the OVG is doing insofar as evaluation performance is concerned. We're able to reach 12, we had planned 12, we reached 12. Second, one of the things that one needs to mention is that in the main of this financial year, the focus was to support the work of the two branches, the Commission and LFTR, in the achievement of their own targets. So we focus greatly on that, given that in the past maybe two or three financial years ago, there had been an identification of a bottleneck insofar as the OVG is concerned, and we had to make sure that we assist the department to achieve its own target, and that's what we have seen, and that has been the case with the reports that we've passed. I think we should give to Mr. Director.
So as we look at the last indicator check, it talks to the target of qualified audit opinion. That was the target, and we achieved that target. So that would be the last indicator. And then on the financial report, the first slide talks to exactly what I spoke to. For the 2022-23 OVG, maintained the team audit. So it was an unqualified audit without material findings on the financial statements, legislative compliance, and performance. Chair, if we look at the allocation of budget for 2022-23, OVG was allocated a budget of 107 million. We also were able to earn other income of 1.6 million, the majority of which was from revenue related to provision of services, valuation services. So the OVG was requested by the EFFE to assist in terms of a certain number of properties to be valued, and that those services and the OVG in excess of 1.5 million for the 2024 financial year. If we look at spending check on compensation of employees, the OVG spent 35.4 million, which is 76% of the allocated budget of 58.5 million. On goods and services, the spending was 37.4 million, which is 27% of the allocated budget of 58.5 million. In total, overall picture, 82.8 million was spent, which represents 27% of the allocated budget of 107 million. At the end of the financial year, there was a surplus of 26 million. Just looking at the overall picture, again, just some notes on the financial performance check. So, like I said, we received revenue of around 107 million from the fiscal in 2022-23. The allocation decreased from 131.8 million in the previous year, and the decrease was attributable to budget cuts by the National Treasury. Also, reprivatization of funds by the department. Revenue from valuation services increased by 527% from 244,000 in 2022 financial year to around 1.5 million in the 2023 financial year. The OVG also received interest of around 70,000 on a positive bank balance. This one is a bit low because from inception, the OPG was struggling to secure approval of interest-bearing account from a national treasury. When we did secure the account, it was, I think, 1 month left in the financial year. And for that reason, the picture should be different in the current financial year going forward. We also earned an income of around 86,000 from, which was realized from foreign exchange transactions check. Expenditure amounted to 82.9 million in the 2023 financial year. The expenditure reflects a 21% increase from 68.4 million in the 2022 financial year. This shows improvement in the spending trends due to ramp up operations. So, Chair, if you had to compare from inception, especially 2021-22, we still had challenges in terms of staff complement. I think the Commissioner has already spoken to that. But there has been improvement in terms of spending trends in the OVG. We had irregular expenditure identified, which was amounted to around 7,000 chair. There was some other amounts that were identified
commission with a view to finalize before the end of this financial year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members, of the presentation of the Office of the Valuer General. And we take a second presentation, PPCB.
facilities and capacity of own resources. And the third program that I would like to highlight is the Enterprise Resource Planning Program or Initiative, the ERP, which the PPECB started a while back, but which is a systematic approach to digitize the interface with our clients. And we have seen good progress the past season and two of the uptake of this initiative, which is ultimately aimed at enhancing our efficiency and service delivery to the client base. So with that introduction, Honorable Chair, I'll hand over to Cyril.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, DG and senior officials, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to come and account of our performance and to say what we have done with the funds that have been entrusted to us. Our full slide today is on our PPEC board. We sometimes get a question what is a broker club. Ms. Bongi Tivenjobi is our current chairperson. Michael Brunkes is our vice chair today here. They had their first meeting in February last year, and they still have 2 years to go. And they are representative of the industries we serve, but predominantly in the food industry. The core business of the PPECB is to inspect and certify fruit, vegetables, and some other products in terms of quality, food safety, and also the absence of pests and diseases so that these products can enter our import markets unhindered and with minimum disruptions when they are stopped at the borders of our import markets. So I just have a few figures on our main export volumes. Our farmers can still access the European market on our citrus fruit. We have done 170 million cartons for the period under review, 22-23. It is a bit down from the previous year, and it was predominantly due to a drop in the demand for grapefruit that caused that. We discussed, or the FCM was cutting what was mentioned earlier today. So we had 3 intersections reported from Europe. It was a bit down from the previous year, it was 16. Citrus black spot is also problematic in our in the EU market. They reported 29, and the 29 was also down from 3 the previous year. So at this stage, the fruit can enter. The Europeans are biggest Europe's our biggest market can still enter, but it's getting more and more difficult for our farmers to access this specific market. Then our table grapes, we normally do about above 70 million cartons in a season. This in the period we did 59 million cartons, which was a drop of nearly 15% compared to the previous year. And as you can recall, we had some heavy rains in the Western Cape and in the Northern Cape as well. And then we also had some heat waves that caused the table grapes to suffer and caused a drop in production as well. Palm fruit had a good year as the farmers recovered from the drought that was experienced in the previous years, and they were 4.8%, nearly 5% up on their exports. Stone fruit, however, showed a nearly 9% drop, and that is also due to the heat wave that we experienced. They are very sensitive to stone fruit, peaches and nectarines, apricots, and when they have excessive heat, then they develop internal quality problems. So we get about 21 million cartons for import markets. Avocados goes up and down, and the local market is much bigger. There's sometimes a very strong demand for avocados in our local market. But in this year, the figure went up by 17% compared to the previous year. But it remains very precarious for our growers as there's fierce competition from countries like Peru into the European market specifically. Then grain, there's a great demand for grain products, and in this period it was due to the war in Ukraine. Ukraine couldn't get their grain out, so there was a big demand for grain from alternative countries, and South Africa really took opportunity and we explored 4 million tons and 3.4 million was maize, and the rest of it was made by soybeans and the like. And then the Far East took more than half of that, and there's also a strong demand from neighboring countries in Africa, which took 25% of our exports. So that's our core business, as I said earlier on, is predominantly fruit, so where this could go to. The European Union or the European continent takes 34%, or the UK 12%, so they take nearly half of what we can export. And then Asia takes about 20% as well. So that it remains fairly stable. It was just a 1% drop from Asia and 1% drop in North America in this period, in the previous year. And that was taken up by the EU markets. Then what we do culminates in the issuance of an export certificate. The clients then take and obtain then a certificate from the department. And for a period under review, we issued 186,000 certificates to our clients. And there were some problems with these certificates, and then they have to be cancelled as well. But in all in all, we had a nearly 3% increase in certificates issued, and this was mainly due to the increase in citrus that we served. Then, to prevent the failure of equipment like containers carrying produce to our import markets, the ECB inspect these containers to ensure that they are clean, that they are structurally sound, and that the cooling units can do their job efficiently and effectively. And sometimes they do fail, and we inspected 421,000 containers, of which we rejected nearly 35,000. And when we make a conservative sum of 500,000 rand per container, we then prevented a 1.7 billion loss to our industry, meaning that if these containers carry the product, they failed, and this would have been the losses that our growers and exporters then suffered. In terms of our role in food safety in the country, we have a laboratory. It did nearly 20,000 samples in the year. We like to do more if there is a demand from our clients, but there's also a demand from our statutory functions that we need to do, and we are now implementing a laboratory expansion plan to increase our capacity to do more testing on products tested specifically for export. Then we also do audits on our farms to ensure that they cover the basic requirements in terms of food safety, and we call these SAGAP or SA Good Agricultural Practices practice audits, and we've done over 1,000 of these audits in the year. Then we also have a smaller research and development component. We have been commissioned by the OECD to do a climate change study. They paid for the study, and it was well received, and it has been presented more than six times internationally, where people would like to know what is happening in terms of climate change and how our growers impacted. So it was well received. Then we also partner with some with private clients on specifically on blueberries, determine what food waste and loss percentages we experience from farm to the market. As these are very simple products, and this research is still continuing. We continually have to do research on what temperatures we can carry the product to our markets, and these temperatures we as PPCB prescribe to the exporters. And while we have well established temperature regimes by sea, we are still doing some more research in terms of our aircraft, which have shorter periods but is just as risky as exporting by sea. And we also have with the Food Chain Association based in Europe, we have a memorandum understanding with them that we partner with them to investigate these temperature regimes that we can apply to our products. the big inspections onto our digital platform, which is called Titan 2.0. It is voluntary assistance at large, but we focus on our big volume products and citrus, like citrus fruit grapes, cold fruit, stone fruit, and avocados. And we are not near, we're not 100% on these products as yet, but we're slowly getting there as there is some financial impact on our clients to get into the system. Our system needs to seamlessly link the theirs as well. But we are making good work in this regard. And 2% of these main products are currently on, inspected digitally. So I'm going to hand to our CFO for the financial information, and then I will just add a few slides at the end. I will talk to you as well.
Honorable Chair, members of Portfolio Committee, it's a pleasure to present the PepsiCo's financial statements, audited financial statements for the financial year 2022-2023. The first slide covers work financial ratios, benchmarks, but compared to this, where the actuals compared to this benchmark. Overall, very good. There are just two ratios that show a decline. The first one is the cash flow to revenue ratio, which we said the target is 5%, and the actual is 0.5%. The main reason for that is our investment in the ERP system, as well as purchasing laboratory equipment. So there was a net cash outflow, not a net, it's still positive, but there is it's been reduced. The good one was bad debt. If you look at the bad debt, we said 1%, that's our target. We achieved 0.04 debt, the bad debt in KPC. The asset reserve ratio, that's the other ratio that slightly declined, it's 134%, our target is 150%, and once again the main reason is investment in ICT equipment that pushed up the total value of assets in relation to our reserve. If you look at the net result, we posted a net result of 12.5 million against last year budget. We budgeted for 28.2 million shortfall, but against last year, it is down against last year. Because last year we made a surplus of 5.4 million. If I quickly summarize the changes between budget and last year to this year's results, the budget was the net result against the budget is 28 million. The net result of the budget is 28 million. At least the change in surplus is what we achieved is 45.5 million better than budget. And that is because of income. It's 36.5 million better, and expenditure is 4 million rand better. Expenditure is 1% better, and income from products, services that we deliver is 7% better. If you look at the budget, actual against budget on expenditure, that 1%, the employment cost is 13 million rand over, and that is mainly because of certain the increase in volume in citrus. We had to capacitate it. And the operational cost base was a reduction of 70 million rand below budget. Against last year, we look at a surplus of 35.4 million, and the total net result changed to 12.5 million. The 23.5 million was caused by 33.5 million, 6% better in income, and 57.1 million, which is 11% up. The expenditure is 11% up on last year. Once again, the reason is both employment cost and operating cost. It's both 11% up on last year. The financial performance results, if you look at the income categories, the major section or category from which we receive income, so APGS services, that's 63%, and the PPEC services is 30%. APS, the total value is 378 million against the PPEC of 176 million, cold chain services. Food safety service services with 4% brings us 22 million into income. And the other income, the 3%, is mostly because of interest receivable on the cash that we have, as well as other services like service level agreements that we have with the industries providing the world with information. If you look at the inflation versus levies, for the 2018, 2019 and 2020, we were above the actual inflation, but since in 21, 22 and 23, we were our levies increased below inflation. So it was 4.5% last year, and inflation, as per SA statistics, they reported 7%. Programs, we have 4 programs there, and statutory services is 66%, and that represents 386 million rand of our total budget. Our total budget is 584 million, 386 is statutory services, 29 million or 5% is food safety, and then corporate services is 28%, which is 163 million, and that's the, one of the big items there is the IT digitalization drive that PPCB follows. And then development services, 6 million, it's 1% of our total budget. Expense category, if you look at the categories, what makes the expenses up, 71% employment costs, operations is 15%, ICT is been increasing steadily over the past 3 years, that is now 11% of the total cost, and administration cost, 3%. Financial position of the PPCB, financial position and health of the PPCB remains strong. The cash inflow, 152 million. The receivables, what we received from debtors, 72.029 million, that's the debtors. Cash is 152 million. And the fixed assets is 40.1 million. And the major part of that is the building in Cape Town. But also ICT assets is becoming a prominent in value in our fixed asset investment. In terms of our liabilities, that is 19 million rand liabilities. Revaluation, that's our reserves, is revaluation is 20 million rand, and self-insurance 31 million rand. We have a self-insurance reserve. That is for losses in mobile equipment, ICT equipment, because we have mobile, it's quite a risky item to insure. And for that reason, we said it's better, it's more cost efficient to provide internally for losses in mobile IT equipment. And then the general reserve is 132 million, and that is if there's a drop in volume, a dramatic drop in volume. We have a major part of our expenditure, if you look at employment costs, if you look at the lease costs, those are fixed. ICT costs, you know, the rental, the lines, internet, those are fixed costs. So if the volume drops and we don't get that revenue, we require that reserve to support, to sustain the continuation of the business. If you look at cash flow, our opening balance was for 149 million, and our receipts is 600 million. That is from the services that we deliver. Of that 600 million, 413 million was given to our employees, and 176 million to our suppliers. And assets are 7.5 million, and we sit with a closing balance of 152 million, slightly higher than last year. The external audit outcome and the audit financial statements, the outcome of that audit was unqualified. The overall assessment on our financial viability, that is unmodified, it remains good, sustainable. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that's 796,000 rand, and the irregular expenditure is 1.2 million rand. The regular expenditure, it's slightly lower than last year, whilst the wasteful expenditure, that increased on last year. And that is mainly because of, we did lose some of the mobile assets, ICT equipment, to the value of 550,000, and then also a resignation of employee that was not registered in our records. That was 200, as well as cell phone contracts that people did not honor. That was 208 million. Report on the audit of the annual performance report, there's no material findings. Report on the audit of compliance of legislation, no material findings. Risk of management of overriding controls, the risk is significant. The two risks that the auditors regard as high, and that is management overriding costs, as well as the risk of fraud in procurement, but also across the business. We work with timesheets, claims, so fraud is a high risk, and that gets focused on by the auditors, and the audits are intensive there. The findings affecting the auditor's report, there was none, but we have five administrative findings and three findings on financial matters. And the financial matters findings it's not significant, but there was a performance indicator, a difference of one test in the laboratory that we differed from our records. And then there was also procurement findings of the deviation that was, we incurred the cost before the CEO approved the deviation document. I think that was my last slide. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, CFO. Chair, we'll just take a few slides to end off. We have 14 targets, KPIs, and some of them are in display here. Our target for our BEE registered suppliers is 50%, we achieve 95%. Then our flagship training program, which is our agri export program, where we take graduates and train them and then make them ready to be employed by anyone in the prestigious industry. Our target is 45. We take in more due to some people falling off and resigning and finding work, but we managed to get 52 people in this program. Our customer satisfaction target is 80% and we achieve 89%. And then the beneficiaries from our social corporate social initiatives were nearly 4,000. Then on the smallholder farmers trained and certified as export ready, we did much more than our targets. Our targets for the training was 50, and then for market ready or certified export ready was 20. So we have since increased these targets as we now found that the provinces are providing more names to us, and then we can train more farmers. So we are now steadily increasing these two KPIs so that we can do more in the smaller farmers. Just where these smaller farmers are being trained. In Kompo, the Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga is having the lion's share, but these percentages depend entirely on the province that provides the names of these farmers to us. So as I said, we would like to train more farmers in future. Then on our students that we take in, where are they coming from Western Cape 25%, Gauteng 17%, Eastern Cape 23%. But again, these are dependent on our operational needs, but also on the applications that we receive. So if we see more applications in Cape 10, for example, in future, we will take on more students from that area. And we really do encourage them to apply so that they can be trained and find work in the industry. Some challenges that we're facing, logistical challenges. We all know the situation within the ports currently. It's very bad. In the Cape Town port, wind delays are adding to our problems. And currently, farmers are trucking containers to ports in the Eastern Cape and Durban port as well. And our exporters are telling us that to get a container is 27,000 rand from Cape Town to the Eastern Cape to PE. And to get it into Durban, it's 50,000 rand. Then it's water soaked and it will come around, take down all the way again to reach the European market. So the farmers are really doing everything they can to get a product out and to service their obligations in the import market. Then load shedding is still causing havoc with our operations. We are now, as I said, nearly fully digital, and we depend on power to do our work, just as our pack houses and our farmers do as well. The EU regulations in terms of surplus black spot and FCM remains a headache, and our department is really working hard to make it more easier for our farmers, and the PPCB is supporting them in that regard as well by implementing some of the requirements of the European Union. We're also working hard to make our data security more secure, our data, but we get thousands of attempts every day where people want to breach our security systems and our firewall, but it remains so. And then severe weather events, floods, hailstorms. We had a hailstorm last week in the result, where the reports now say that 100 million rand of surplus was destroyed. Distant to be harvested for next season. So these severe weather events are really also causing headaches for our farmers. In the road ahead, we will still implement our strategy, which is basically digitalization. We will try to get more farmers onto Titan 2, that we can do more digital inspections, and we will also like to, in our cold chain environment, also implement this digital platform as well. And we also like to increase our data provision offering to our customers and make it more accurate and more on time. Our customers require this information to make market decisions where to scale through. If there's oversupply in certain markets, that they can get divert food away from that market to the other market. And then our costs, because we are driving around on the farms every day, we drive more than 5 million kilometers a year. It is expensive, and we are looking at ways how to improve our efficiencies and to leverage our people to do more increasing our expense. Then market access for our agricultural products is still a problem as well, especially to open up more markets in the East. And here we are also supporting our department of agriculture, especially on the cold chain requirements to access these markets. And we will then also continue to our vice chair referred to the system, the ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning System, and will continue to implement this throughout our organization for the next year. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to come in front. That's the end of our presentation.
Thank you. As the presentation on members of CPCT, we have opportunity to plot in another presentation from NAME. So let's take NAME. So no, you can't keep adding. For the second day tomorrow. So it's either we conclude here with these two, and then we have the second day for tomorrow. You still have questions from members, you still have responses, and at 6:30 we must be done. So we try to manage time. Are we good for time, NAMEC, SAVEC and the other entities, ARC, and the rest will be taken tomorrow? Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good evening to the Honourable Members and to the other colleagues in the room. Let me start by apologizing on behalf of the Chairperson of the NAMC. He had booked himself to join tomorrow, but I think due to the changes, he couldn't make it today.
Chairperson has said that he trusts us.
functions or the other targets, we were also able to meet our targets in terms of our aim to have an unqualified audit report. I must say, Chair, that we are also looking at gradually getting to a point where we have a clean audit, and we were able to achieve unqualified audit for this year. And the CFO will dwell a little bit more on the audit findings a bit later. On the ICT, human capital, as well as corporate communications, we've achieved the administrative targets there. In terms of program two, we have also achieved all our targets in terms of the statutory measures function, trade advisory, value chain analysis, agricultural trust reports that we are supposed to produce, transformation reports, market intelligence, as well as supply and demand estimates reports that we produce as part of our advisory services. Just some figures, Chair, which I will not go into detail at. We currently coordinate the collection of levies by the various industries, and for this year we have analyzed and noted that there has been an increase in the amount of levies collected, as well as the expenditure towards the various functions such as research and development, consumer education, export promotions, etc. And 20% of the levies collected, there is a requirement that they are spent on transformation. In terms of our monitoring of trust activities, the asset value of the 11 trusts has increased by 47.8 million, rising from 2.4 billion to 2.48 billion. The trust spent 5.9 million in transformation. The governance of this trust was undertaken through a board of trustees, where there is representation from the minister or ministerially appointed trustees, as well as industry appointed trustees. Those are just the breakdown of the figures from the 11 trusts. In terms of transformation expenditures, there has been fluctuations depending on the market movements, Chair, because what happens is that the proceeds from the various investments that the trusts have are the ones that get actually spent towards the various activities of the trust, including transformation. Hence, the amount that ultimately gets spent on transformation tends to fluctuate quite a lot over on an annual basis. In terms of further observations on transformation, there was a total of 225 billion on transformation that were spent. If you take both the trust as well as the levies, which is an increase of 10.68%. That's just the representation in terms of the figures there. We have a little bit of a concern with regards to the issue of employment equities within the industry. This is a matter that we are currently discussing and engaging with the various industries on. It's an ongoing discussion, Chair. This is just to show the kind of research that we do on the trade issues. This is, as I said earlier, part of the advisory services that we offer to the minister as well as the current groups. Chair, I'm going to go through the details of the research. Those are some of the highlights in terms of the value chain study. You need a copy. I'll now look at program three, which is looking at the issue of enhanced market access. The target for the year was 80 farmers, smallholder farmers, into the market.
we were able to exceed the target, we were able to assist 109 farmers to access the market over the financial year and the year. These farmers are based in KZN as well as the Free States, and we work in partnership with the various public sector as well as private sector stakeholders in this regard. We also design what we call production schemes, which is basically a focus on assisting black farmers to into the mainstream economy. We managed to work on a design for citrus as well as a red meat production scheme. We track market access through a report called the Smallholder Market Access Tracker, which we produce regularly. I'm not going to go through the details there. Those are some of the highlights and the findings from the Smallholder Market Access Tracker. A quick look at the HR aspects. Chair, just to highlight here that we've had a challenge with making sure that we retain staff. We've had a challenge of losing some of the qualified staff being poached mainly by the private sector. This is mainly due to the financial and fiscal constraints that we face. Our budget has been cut, and we're not able to offer inflation-related increases, for example, and we tend to lose some of the critical staff to the private sector. Some gender statistics, Chair, are also indicated on the screen, and a list of the appointments for the year. I'm not going to go through details there as well. In terms of the staff turnover, as I said, Chair, we are quite concerned. By the end of the financial year, it was standing at 12%, and it is quite a concern. The council has elevated this as a strategic risk, and we are managing it under the oversight of council. We also benefit from some funding from AgriCeta to be able to bring in some young graduates into the fold. Those are the figures from the past financial year. Chair, I'm going to now invite the CFO to look at the financials.
Okay. Thank you for your introduction, Chairperson and all members. I will proceed with the financial outcome for the financial year 2022-23. This is a summary in comparison of the financials between 2022-23 and 2021-22. In terms of the grant, there was just a slight increase, which is about 2.5% increase that we've received, and just to mention that we are 100% reliant on the grant at this moment. Part of the income that we also receive is the interest income, mainly from some of the, we do manage some of the projects, and from those projects we are able to save and get some money. There was no major difference between the comparison of the two financial years. We also received some sponsorship. This is some of the projects that I've spoken about that we manage, some as a principal and some as agent. So the details of those projects are also included in our annual report. There was just a slight decrease in the financial year under review of about 31%. So that's on the income part, and the overall expenditure is in a summary. There hasn't been a lot of a movement comparison of the two financial years. We've spent 54.2 million in 2022-23. With regard to the assets part, also we basically overall in 2022-23 we are seeing a slight decline in almost all our major financial items. The total current assets, there was also a decline of about 17%, meaning we didn't really procure much of assets, but however we depreciated some of the assets that we have. And to the non-current assets also, we are seeing a decline. We have not acquired anything of the non-current in the financial year under review. The current liability also decreased, and this one is mainly the major liability is on the deferred income. That's the project funds that we've received, but we have not yet spent on. And the fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure, there has been a huge decline of 65%. Auditor General, in their presentation, they did indicate that part of it, about 1.4 million, relates to the contract that was signed without following delegation, and some of the last portion relates to the human resources. All of those are receiving attention, and we will be happy to report no irregular in the near future. With regard to the external audit report, we've received unqualified with findings. They were findings mainly that relate to consequence management that we've taken a while to resolve, but we have since finalized the consequence management and do all the due processes as required by the framework. The next slide is the comparison in terms of our spending with the budget. As at the end of financial year, we had a surplus of 2.7 million that we didn't manage to spend. That led to the 1% that the CEO mentioned earlier on. But overall, the spending looked good compared to what we have budgeted for. The various explanation on those ones, the other income and sponsorship received, we've got a variance of 1.7 million that relates to the amount that we've received and utilized for sponsorship projects as well as management fee generated from this project. The other one, the interest, I've already explained that one. With regard to the expenditure part, our major expenditure is on personnel. That takes about 75% of our grant. We had an unfavorable variance of 1.2 million. That is as a result of the salaries for interns which are paid through the aggregator funding. With regard to administration expenses, we've got a favorable variance of 5.3 million. This was due to savings on some of the costs due to some of our staff members working from home. We do a save on things like printing, stationery, etc. The operating expenses, it shows an unfavorable variance of 2.7 million. There was an increase in operating expenses such as the research costs and some of the travel and accommodation expenses. With regard to the balance sheet, I've already touched on the high level, but on the non-current assets, the year under review compared to the previous financial year, we are seeing a slight decline there due to depreciation and some of the disposal of assets during the financial year. Our receivables also show a decline of 65%. Mainly, there has been a decrease in outstanding invoices that we've raised at the end of financial year. Our cash and cash equivalents also shows a decline of 14%. This is due to decrease in additional funds that we receive for projects. And our liability overall, a decrease of 27%. Mainly due to decrease in sponsorship funding that we've received, but not yet used. utilized at the end of financial year. So this brings closure to the summary in terms of financial report. Thank you.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. We have reached the end of our presentation. We look forward to the questions.
Thank you, honorable members. There's the great presentation from OBG, PPCC, and we'll open the session for questions of clarity or comment. Honorable Kato.
Let me check. Straight on OBG. Only if you want, only two there. There was the mention of increase in the property operated, which was regarded as, which was referred to as something that made it a poor, underperformance. But definitely this is a positive one, and therefore there should be a way, and how is it going to be handled? Because it's a positive one, it's being increased, therefore they should design a way of mitigating. Secondly, there's this also part of the job outside, which made you to get 106 million, which means that to some extent you have capacity and you may have resources. And therefore, this also has to be managed, because it means that the department must give you more. But that one also must not make you decide for this, because this one of getting money from outside is positive. The ECB, I learned that you mentioned the effect of load shedding, but I don't know how much this affected your performance and how much was being destroyed and how were you managing it. Secondly, do you have any competition or comparison between organic and inorganic products when you export? Because I know that other countries prefer their organic products. Next one, did you stop any export to Israel? If there was any. And then is the rate of job creation in your work, especially that one of internship, where you can help young people to learn from the work that you are doing. You talk of food safety, therefore when you talk of food safety, to me, it means that you have a link with the department who have this program of food safety. I would like to understand what is happening there, how are you managing that. There is talk, we also talk about the research and the institutions involved there. How do you relate with ARC on this part of research? And is the department somehow assisting you on this part of the European Union regulations which are negatively affecting? Number, there was a time when I understand that they were part of your responsibilities that were to be taken by ARC. Which one was that, and then did it happen? And on the part of custom fees, which I do not hear you talk about anything of them, and any training which is supposed to be going on with your small farmers. Thank you.
Thank you,
Honorable Papa. Thank you, Chairperson. I do not have a question. It's only that what I need to point out from the side of the PPECB. Some years back, there was a huge outcry from these smallholder farmers who were complaining about not having good sized farms to sort of establish themselves. Now the
farming, farming business, they've been in a position to expose themselves to us. The huge of cars was around the land and the assistance from the side of the administration control troops. That people are complaining they were not drawn into. There was some form of a rejection from the side of the big farmers who did not want to see the smaller farmers coming. That's my only comment, Chairperson. There's nothing more on both the OPG and the NAMAT.
That was it. The Honorable Trevor Kuhn, Stavulia. The Honorable Trevor.
Chairperson, I would start with NAMAT. I'll start from the bottom. With NAMAT, two of my clarity questions are covered by the interpreter. I'm left with two. The first one, Chair, I can see in your presentation that you comply with your, in terms of your employment equity, you comply with your gender equity. I'm raising this, Chair, as a concern that, but there is no reflection of the entire component of the employment equity strategy, because all of them are taken up. But there is an employment equity act that talks to that. How then do you plan to address that in the near future? The second question to NAMAT, there is a 2.1 million of frivolous, wasteful and irregular expenditure that has been reported to us. Can we get a reflection on which areas, what consists of the 2.1 million of frivolous wasteful and irregular expenditure? Going to to PPECD, PPECD Chair presented to us that they have 105 smallholder farmers certified as export ready. Can we get a breakdown in terms of from which province and what commodities are they export ready for? That's one. The second question to PPECB, I've noted that it's in your budget, ICT takes 11% of your budget, which is 4% closer to your operations budget, which is 15%. That's 15% of your entire budget. Now, Chair, having that in mind, of 11% of the entire budget of them, and then most of the functionalities of PPECB, they are saying they are digitalized. And yet one of the reasons that they are giving us in terms of not achieving other things is load shedding. Now, if you digitalize all your operations and yet you are affected by load shedding, how then do you balance the two? What plans do you have in balancing the two? And again, Chair, lastly, I will again this year raise this concern of mine. I'm from the Eastern Cape. I think I'm talking on behalf of the rural areas in the Eastern Cape, in the KZN, and all other provinces, which are affected as much as the government. We encourage digitalization, but the fact of the matter, some of the farmers are in rural areas. How then do you make sure that they have access services, your good services, by the way, when it comes to export and certification. Comrade, Mr. Yankee, you will remember that I'm raising this concern again, because I don't see a significant shift from your farmer that you train. You keep on training. Yes, they are good, but I don't unbelieve the rural areas where it matters the most. What plans do you have to empower those that are from the rural areas and also incorporate them to your system? Lastly, Chair, I'm going to OVG. I have a few questions Chairperson OVG, as I conclude. The first one, Chair. One of the priorities of the government is to accelerate land reform and settle land gains. Now, with OVG, with your performance, how then do you align your performance with the National Development Plan and the 2019 to 2024 Mid-Term Strategic Framework? If you we are seated here and you report that it's only 13% of your completed evaluations that you achieve. What is your alignment with this kind of performance? The second question, Chair, to OVG. It took OVG 100 more days to resolve its queries after issuing of the final evaluation certificate, instead of 10 days after issuing of the certificate. Can you get a clarity as to what causes this 100 more days of its delay? The second last check. The Vellore General Post is vacant, and it has been vacant since February 2019. Since February 2019, with this administration, it's only May 2019. It's almost 5 years now, 2024. That position has been vacant. The CEO position has been vacant, you know. After it says since 2015 to 2016. That tells you there's no stability in that institution. If the top two positions are vacant. Now, Chair, the question that I have regarding this, how then do you plan to... There's an interim structure, Chair, in place. How then do you align this interim structure in terms of what plans do you have to fill in the vacant post in your institution to make sure that there is stability? And I also want to make a note, Chair, to the portfolio committee that when it comes to this matter only, of filling in of vacant positions in this entity, we need to monitor this regularly, and we need to get a report as to how far have they gone in terms of filling in this post. This because this entity is affecting Ulem redistribution. And if we are serious about that, the issue of land redistribution, as a committee that we keep on, we have the expropriation bill, we are intending to address the issue of land redistribution. This entity, if we don't monitor closely, in the near future, we must make sure that they are up there again, or else we'll have problems in achieving what we want to achieve. And the government. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Ntate Masiko.
Chair, I think it's really sad that we are addressing this issue with the ministers not being here and the DG not being here. Because some of the questions that Honorable Chetty is asking are the questions that the minister can answer. I don't think that the officials will be able to answer, especially with regards to OPG that she's just raised and some other issues. Chair, just on the issue of while we're on the OVG, the OVG in terms of its report is that they're getting over 100 million from the grant, and they only generate about 1 million from the work that they do. In as far as I'm concerned, you know, the work of the you know, valuation is work that really should be generating a lot of money. I think I just want to ask in terms of really, you know, your overhead is too high. It looks like your turnover, your activities are very low. Maybe if you can just really assist in an explanation with regards to that, as to how you pay me to rent, as you know that the fixed assets is quickly, and you might not be supported. I mean, you should be really generating lots of money from your valuation and not really be relying, you know, 100% on grants, you know. On the NAMC chair, there is obviously issue with regards to the irregular expenditure of 2021-2022. Recorded here as an opening irregular expenditure of about 154 million. There's an opening balance. That, I think, we did kind of late it here. The last time it was not condoned by Treasury. Maybe, Chair, if we can really get a brief from the entity in terms of what has happened with that particular irregular expenditure, if we can get a brief. And, Chair, I would really maybe even ask that to get something in writing around this if the entity might not be able to really fully account in terms of details here. The second question, Chair, is that I did raise it earlier with the Minister with regards to the relationship with the commodity group. The question that I've asked, the written question, and then obviously the written question, SAFTA indicated that it is a commodity group, but I don't see it here as far as one of the commodity group that is working with NAMC. If NAMC can just maybe just assist us in terms of if there is a part of the trust to contribute to the trust and also administrate some of the funds on behalf of the farmer out in Cape Agenda. Thank you, Chair. That's all for my time.
Thank you, Honorable Thomas Sefa.
The last question is to PPDCB. It might not be related to their daily work, but I think, as Chair, you will appreciate that we've got a challenge with regard to food insecurity. The report released lately has indicated that Cape Town and Gauteng will be facing a serious challenge. But one of the issues that we are picking up is food waste at farm level in terms of, you know, the third grade and the fourth grade of those kind of fruits that are not being picked or that are being wasted at farm level. Is there, you know, something that you are picking up as well when you are doing your inspection with regards to that? And maybe, you know, if you can share with us some of the thoughts in the industry in terms of really ensuring that those foods that wasted could reach those that really are under stress with regards to food insecurity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Marco.
Chair, thank you very much. I have been covered by my colleagues most of the questions that I wanted to ask specifically Mekaba and Datikaba and Mekaba. that is by the middle to see. I could think about 15 years. So, so what they, their questions have covered me slightly. But let me ask one question to Namek. To Namek, I heard that there is an expenditure variation because of leadership. Maybe I didn't hear you again. But I think I need to understand what is happening with the 12 million that you displayed there. Then you also talked about the sponsorship, which is not being, which is not going to be utilized. I just wanted to ask you, if you have been sponsored and you did not manage to utilize that amount of money, what is going to happen? Is this not going to affect the sponsors in the future to help you again? And why it is not being utilized? If the red sponsor is being sponsored to you, to your organization. To PECB, they were talking about the, our students to apply so that they can be able to help them to participate in this activity that they are dealing with. So we just wanted to request that the forms, you know, we are coming from rural areas where there is no internet. Sometimes we don't really have a mode of communication because we are in deep rural areas. So if the form can be given to the secretariat's office here, it will be better because we come from different provinces, can be able to give our people in the area for our younger generation to try participate in this in your activity. We feel that the young people can be able to be. You know, we have got so many unemployed young people in South Africa, which needs our assistance, all of us, our assistance. So let's try to get those forms to our secretaries and then send them to all different members in 9 provinces, because we are here as 9 provinces. So your message of them applying will reach people quickly, because Tina on Sunday to go to the Horo. I don't know if you understand what I'm talking about, Horo. If you didn't understand, then you will ask somebody else next door. We will take those forms to those areas. Our people are not all of them going to the internet, but on Sunday we go to the Horo in the morning and then we'll be able to get that information. So it's to because I know that with PPECB, if I'm calling it correct, it's based mostly here where there is here in Cape Town. So you might not be able to know what the problem looks like, but we can help you. Thank you very much. Let me go to Chairperson. I heard in their presentation they were talking about the issue certificate in 34 days. And then they also, I don't still remember the page number. And there were targets that are not achieved. And then there is an under expenditure of 26 million rand. What's happening here? Why do you have under expenditure of 26 million rand? Unless they not get it clearly, but I think that's what I saw. So I need, it's just a small clarity on that. I also like to get progress on investigation in the year under review concerning the theft of losses by officials amounting 8,300, blah blah blah, or 83,000 or the past 8,3,4,9,2, something like that. So can you please update me on that? wanted to also lastly here to say the Valuer General, the Valuer General's office, as we mentioned, has already mentioned that it's long been outstanding. I don't know if we understand the vision and the mission of the government of today, or for the people of South Africa, where we all need land, we need land where we can be able to plow and do other things on it. Those that are now there in the offices, are you enjoying to be in those offices without having the Valuer General? Or what is the problem? Is there South Africa not able to deal with those skills that can be the Valuer General? You must call me, I'll come. Because even if I don't have that skill, but it's too long that you did not have the Valuer General in this office. We request that those that are in that office must come up with plans to make sure that you move towards making sure that the Valuer General is being recruited and then applied, so that this office must be the office that is having the person who can. We need land. We don't want to see South Africa uprising against us as people of South Africa with the issue of land. I don't know if you people see what is happening in the media about land. So if at the end of the day people are not getting land, we have some of your officials in these offices who will go around and say we'll assist people, we'll assist people, and they don't assist those people. At the end of the day, they say there are reports that need to be, you know, and at the end of the day, they resign from your department and they go and they pull our people out there that we will get land. This is not an issue that we are happy about, Honorable Chair. Let these people make sure that they facilitate the issue of making sure that they recruit the person who is needed in this office to occupy this book. All those people that are legitimate for this book. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Memoato, the Honorable Tatema. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps we must ask OBG to commit on the time frame for the appointment of the OBG, the Valuer General. Don't commit, because we don't want to sound like a broken record. For the last couple of years, we have been sitting the same way. If it doesn't concern you, it does concern us, because we need stability in that office so that we can be confident that can be expressed in leadership and institutional coherence and stability in order to guide issues of dispute on property and land values, so that we have a sense of that. That's the first point about OBG. But then on the perishable product, over and above your mandate to inspect and to regulate the industry, what is it that you envision beyond the regulation and inspection role in respect of contributing in creating conducive environment for rural economy? Specifically in this way, don't you think that could be a decisive intervention if we can go into rural provinces and ensure that there are fresh produce markets there? In Nanduru, in the Eastern Cape, there is no fresh produce. Please go and just one fresh produce market in the rural area. That's one. Just commit to that.
On the
general division.
informed that the honourable member's transport is leaving at 6:30 in 11 minutes, and you need to be there, or else you will be transport left. So, we would not want to detain you further, but we have to get the work of the portfolio committee done in terms of ensuring that these three entities have responded to the questions raised. We will plead, therefore, with the entities as having presented to respond to the committee in writing, as this was not anticipated that we will run till this late. Our scheduled time was supposed to end at 5:00, but we tried to accommodate everyone on the time that we had. So if we may have then OBG, PPCB, as well as NAMEN respond to the committee in writing by no later than end of business day on Friday, Friday the 16th. I can assist by no later than end of business day on Friday the 16th. If that is in order, honourable members, let me then sponsor this question in terms of the presentations that have been put before. With the presentation of the OVG, perhaps Honourable Trete and some extent Honourable Papa has covered. But I may want to stress on the following. As the OVG struggled to meet the targets to complete all valuations submitted by its clients, and therefore, honourable members, worried that the failure to complete these evaluations will have a negative effect on commitment to accelerate land redistribution. Are there any systems or mechanisms put in place to address the shortcomings in the system? What are the number of valuations, the requests received and completed in 2022-23 compared to that which was received and completed in 2021-22. I am interested in the comparison of performance. In the past, the OVG reported that it was conducting an analysis on the current operating model, organizational structure and valuation capacity of the OVG to bring about an optimal operating model and required valuation capacity in the OVG, and also review of PVA regulations. Has the analysis and the operating model been concluded? I note that it should have been completed by October 2023. In regards to rejection of offers and compensation, which is of great concern as it has a negative effect on pace of land redistribution or restitution, of all the valuations done, what is the percentage rate of rejection of offers? And what is the OVG doing about it? I note that rejection analysis of offers and compensation should have been completed in June 2023. It was reported that the OVG portfolio committee with regard to the ministerial advisory panel recommendations, especially in relation to how it proposed how the role and mandate of the OVG should be shaped. Lastly, on the OVG, please explain what contributed to the under expenditure of 26 million rand at the end of 2022-23 financial year, and indicate measures that will be taken to improve on spending on or addressing the shortcomings or challenges leading to the under expenditure. With the presentation by PPCB, I'd like to ascertain, particularly from our last oversight visit to PPCB, we came to learn that we were in business with the Islamic entity that being the apartheid state of Israel, and we were exporting fresh produce there. How much business is done with the Zionist apartheid state of Israel, and taking into the stance of the Republic of South Africa having laid a complaint or a charge of genocide against the entity in terms of the Genocide Convention in the International Court of Justice, which has ruled on the matter and has requested the Zionist Apartheid State of Israel to appear before the ICJ with a report within a month. What has been the impact of this ruling on your export to the Zionist State of Israel? The minister has been of assistance in forming the committee that Grace in particular has been the backlash of the Zionist Apartheid State of Israel, where two companies have cancelled their orders. So what impact has this had on the PPCB and its exports? Our friends in the International Solidarity campaign, that being the Yemeni and the Houthis in particular, have graciously closed the Red Sea and therefore prevented any ship that is Israeli owned or that is trading with the Zionist Apartheid State of Israel, therefore leading to many ships diverting from utilizing the Red Sea and the Suez Canal to going around the African continent. And the Zionist entity is losing billions in this regard. What has this translated to in terms of the business PPCB is involved in handling of exports to these to the Zionist entity, but most importantly, with all this traffic coming around, how much are you seeing coming into our ports, that being Durban as well as Cape Town? You can enlighten us in that regard. On the NEMEC presentation,
should start with the real issue of staffing, which seems to be 100% Lily African. How is this so? In 8 years of our democracy, when we vowed to move from racist tendencies, that you as an entity exclude white people, exclude colors, exclude India, and only talk to an employment of Lily Africans, is that African inclusive of the broad understanding of non-Europeans or black, or have you embraced the tendencies of the past that we've removed white supremacy and replaced it with African supremacy? If you can assist me in understanding your thinking in this regard. On expenditure management and non-compliance with National Treasury regulation, the PFMA seems to be a serious challenge with NAMEC. In the reporting year, the NAMEC incurred irregular expenditure worth 2.1 million. That was in respect of 1.48 million for agriculture and agro-processing master plan contract that was signed without following delegation of authority, and 624,000 due to non-compliance with the recruitment policy, and 114,000 as a result of the service provider being engaged without a contract in place. And NAMEC, NAMEC reported that the irregular expenditure incurred in the year under review is under assessment and updates in this regard will be appreciated. Lastly, it is noteworthy to remind NAMEC that it is not the first time that a contract has been signed for the agriculture and agro-processing master plan without following delegation of authority. In 2020 and 2021, the Auditor General of South Africa drew attention to a preliminary report that was issued on the 1st of February 2021 on suspected fraud, corruption, and conflict of interest on the procurement and contract management relating to agriculture and agro-processing master plan. By the 31st of August 2021, the Board of NAMEC had initiated a process to implement the recommendations contained in the preliminary report. However, by 31st July 2022, the AG further drew attention to the fact that the Board had not completed a full investigation as per the recommendations contained in the preliminary investigation report issued on suspected fraud, corruption, and conflict of interest in procurement and contract management relating to the agriculture master plan contract. Can we get an update and possibly a full written report from NAMEC regarding this matter? That will be all, honorable members, and as I've made a request, can these questions be responded in writing? I'd like to request we end our meeting at this juncture.
as members have needed to run for their passes. I'd like to ask the Secretariat to communicate to all members that buses are available tomorrow. We'll be leaving the pass at 8 o'clock and we shall start at 9 o'clock sharp tomorrow with no delays. So those that will be kick-starting the process, SAVEC will have the first bite. So please switch on your gadgets at 9 and present. With the chair presiding or not, we will start on time. We'd like to thank all the officials of the department, from executive, the minister and the deputy minister, the DGs, the DDGs and officials of the department, together with the entities of the department, for having graced us with your presence today and presented your annual performance plan. We would be want to appreciate the presentation from the AG of South Africa and the officials from the AGSA for having been with us, and we hope you will bear with us to see it through tomorrow, that all your observations have been adhered to and adequately responded to by the entity. Honorable members, allow me to thank our staff, the Secretariat, the content advisors, the researchers, and the logistics team who have enabled us to have this first session of the Portfolio Committee. We will resume tomorrow at 9 o'clock sharp. Thank you. The meeting stands adjourned.